bad state of affairs. He gave me one strong piece of advice. Go get on the phone and start dialing. Truthfully, I was depressed, angry, and full of excuses. I felt like a total loser. But I took his advice and started prospecting. And what was amazing was just taking that action to save my hide boosted my spirits. At first, it didn't feel like I was making any progress. You see, when you're desperate, you try to will the world to conform to your unreasonable deadlines. I felt that I was just going through the motions and sinking deeper into quicksand because I wasn't actually selling anything. But each day of calling added opportunities to my pipe. I stuck with it, and by the end of the quarter, miraculously, I was the number one sales rep in my region. The impact of daily prospecting on my performance that quarter, from zero to hero in just 3 months, made an indelible impression on me. It was a lesson I never had to learn again. Sooner or later, we all let down our guard and find ourselves in desperate need of a sale. The cumulative impact of our poor decisions, procrastination, fear, lack of focus, and even laziness have added up, and suddenly we are desperately scrambling to survive. You can recover, but first you must acknowledge where the blame for your predicament lies. You see, often when we find ourselves in desperate situations, we fall back on human nature and blame everything and everyone for our plight, except, of course, ourselves. The universal law of need doesn't punish others, though. It punishes you for your failures in executing the daily disciplines required for success. Once you look in the mirror and accept your own culpability and take responsibility, you have a chance to change your future. The first rule of sales slumps. The first rule of holes is when you're in one, stop digging. And the first rule of sales slumps is when you're in one, start prospecting. The only real way to get out of a sales slump is to get back up to the plate and start swinging. When you find yourself in a slump, take a breath, acknowledge that your negative emotions are just making things worse, and commit yourself to daily prospecting. Do whatever it takes to get your mind focused on prospecting and commit to daily goals. Don't spend a moment in thought about what might happen to you if you don't get what you need. Worry won't change the future. Likewise, don't get mired down in regret over what you have failed to do. Your future does not lie in the past. Instead, put all of your energy, emotion, and effort into actions that you control. Success in sales is a simple equation of daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, and annual activity. In other words, you are in complete control of your future. Even in a desperate situation, if you go back to the basics and focus on the right activity, soon the results will come. It will usually take about 30 days of dedicated daily activity to get you back on track. One of my absolute favorite quotes is from Arnold Palmer. "The more I practice, the luckier I get." And there is a parallel singularity in sales. The more you prospect, the luckier you get. Will training, experience, and technique make you a better prospector? Of course. However, it is far more important that you prospect consistently than that you prospect using the best techniques. When you prospect consistently, and that means every day, amazing things happen. The cumulative impact of daily prospecting is massive. You begin to connect with the right people and the right accounts at just the right time. Suddenly, opportunities drop in your lap out of nowhere. My team at SalesGreevy calls this phenomenon the sales gods. But most salespeople never get lucky because they only do the minimal amount of prospecting required to just squeak by. And when they do start prospecting, usually out of desperation, they expect instant miracles. When those miracles don't happen, they gripe that prospecting doesn't work and crawl back into the warm comfort of mediocrity. You can't expect to make prospecting calls for a single day and then expect miracles any more than you could expect to hit the driving range once and go on to win a golf tournament. It requires consistent commitment and discipline over time, a little bit every day. So go hit the phones, knock on doors, send emails and text messages, pound LinkedIn, ask for referrals, attend networking events, and talk to strangers. Be fanatical. Don't let anything or anyone stop you, because the more you prospect, the luckier you get. Chapter 6. Know your numbers. Everything around you is mathematics. Everything around you is numbers. Shakuntala Devi. There are people who will tell you that sales is not a numbers game. This statement is often followed with, that's old school thinking, or something I heard more recently, thinking of sales as a numbers game is stupid. Well, being stupid is stupid. Sales is and always has been governed by numbers because in sales, the formula for success is a simple mathematical formula. What you put into the pipe, your quality, and how much you put into the pipe, quantity, determines what you get out of the pipe. Numbers, or the how much, are the science of sales. The what, the size of the prospects, quality of the prospects, the qualification level of the prospects, the depth of your penetration and relationships with decision makers, influencers, and coaches, well, that's a little bit of science and art. Elite athletes know their numbers. Take a moment and think of your favorite professional athlete. If we were to walk up to that person and ask them to tell us about their latest stats, what do you think the probability is that they'd be able to recite a litany of detailed statistics about their performance? I'll guarantee it would be 100%. I know this because elite athletes know their numbers. They know their numbers because their entire focus as competitors is reaching peak performance. Knowing their numbers gives them the data they need to evaluate how they're doing at any given time and, most importantly, to make adjustments. It's no different in sales. Elite salespeople, like elite athletes, track everything. You will never reach peak performance until you know your numbers and use those numbers to make directional corrections. At any given moment, you should know how many calls, contacts, emails, responses, appointments, and sales you have made. You should track social prospecting activity on sites like LinkedIn, text messages sent, and even smoke signals if that is relevant. You should measure how many new prospects or new information points you've gathered about existing prospects that you've added into your database. Once you are tracking your numbers consistently, the door is opened to an honest assessment of both the efficiency and the effectiveness of your sales activities. Efficiency is how much activity you are generating in the time block allotted for a particular prospecting activity. Effectiveness is the ratio between the activity and the outcome. Your drive is to optimize the balance between the two and maximize the outcome. Efficiency plus effectiveness equals performance. E plus E equals P. For example, you could be highly efficient in making prospecting calls on the phone. You're able to crush it and make 100 dials an hour. But if those 100 dials result in no new information, no appointments, or appointments with low potential prospects, what we call LPPs, then you were not effective and essentially wasted your time. Conversely, you could make 10 calls in the same period, setting one appointment with a highly qualified prospect and updating two records in your database. You would be more effective than the previous scenario, but extremely inefficient because you wasted a ton of time and sub-optimized your phone block. Without a doubt, there are dozens of variables that drive efficiency and effectiveness for every potential prospecting channel. Those variables include the quality of the list that you're working from, industry vertical, time of day, time of year, day of week, decision maker role of your contact, product or service, complex sale versus transactional, call objective, prospecting channel, quality of your approach, methodology, message, confidence, your mindset, and much more. However, once you know your numbers, you gain the power to consider these variables objectively. With this information, you'll make small adjustments that can increase or even double your sales. This is why you must gather the courage and self-discipline to track, analyze, and make regular adjustments based on your prospecting performance stats. Keeping count keeps you grounded in reality and focused on your daily goal. It ensures that you remain honest with yourself about where you really stand against your targets and what you need to do or sacrifice to get back on track if you're missing your number. You cannot be delusional and successful at the same time. Last summer, I walked into my office after getting back from an appointment. It was mid-afternoon as I strolled into the sales bullpen to check the temperature of our sales team. I stopped and asked one of my reps how the day was going. He shook his head and whined, "It's awful. No one is pulling the trigger today. I don't know what's going on out there, but I'm hitting a brick wall on every call." "Well, that's not good," I said. "Tell me how many calls you made today." He rolled his eyes and shook his head and said, "A lot. I'm getting nowhere." "Help me understand," I responded. "When you say a lot, what do you mean?" He grimaced like he was in pain. "Well, I don't know exactly. I'm guessing it's easily 50 calls so far today." "You don't understand, Jeb. Something's changed out there. Nobody wants to do anything." "Okay," I said. "Let me see your tracking sheet." I looked down at his desk, searching for the sheet we use at our office to visually track our daily stats. He stared blankly at his computer screen for a moment to gather his thoughts and then responded, "Oh, I forgot to use the tracking sheet today. I've been so busy it just slipped my mind, but I'm keeping up with my calls in Salesforce." "All right then, let's go in and take a look at each of your calls and see if we can find a pattern." I had him walk me through each of the calls he made that day, and while we were doing that, check the call log on our phone system. As we walked through the calls and I asked questions, he became more and more aware of just how few calls he'd made that day. When we finished our conversation, the final tally was 12. 12 calls over a 7-hour period. Completely inefficient and a big question mark about what he'd been doing with his time. At the conclusion of our short coaching session, he said that it felt like he'd made far more calls than he actually had. Because he hadn't been visually tracking his activity, he was blind to where he really stood. In retrospect, he was derailed early in the day after two prospects rejected him harshly. That tripped up his confidence and shifted his mindset. It happens to the best of us. Here's where he made his mistake, though. Because he failed to track his activity, basically allowing the system to do it for him, he had no visibility into what was actually happening with his prospecting activity. With his emotions reeling, he lost touch with reality and deluded himself into believing that he was being productive. One of the commonalities that I observe among top salespeople and fanatical prospectors across all market segments, inside sales and outside sales, is manual tracking of activity. They each have their own style and means of tracking their numbers, but the one thing they all know is exactly where they stand. The majority of salespeople, though, don't track their numbers, because it's so much easier to delude themselves into thinking that they've made far more calls or prospecting touches than they have really made. The false comfort of delusion is warm and fuzzy and far more inviting than the cold edge of reality. When you choose delusion over reality, you are making a conscious choice to not only lie to yourself, but to lower your standards and performance. Reality is the realm of superstars. And joining reality is one of the first steps you'll need to take on the road to developing a fanatical prospecting mindset. Chapter 7. The 3 P's that are holding you back. Start by doing what's necessary. Then do what's possible. And suddenly, you are doing the impossible. Francis of Assisi. There are 3 mindsets that hold salespeople back from prospecting: procrastination, perfectionism, and paralysis from analysis. Procrastination. You've no doubt heard the children's riddle, "What is the best way to eat an elephant?" The answer, of course, is one bite at a time. It's a simple concept, but when it comes to the real world and real problems, not that easy. Far too often, we try to eat the elephants in our lives all in one bite, which results in stress, frustration, and ultimately failure. You can't do all your prospecting for the month in one day. It's impossible and it will never get done. Yet salespeople put prospecting off, always with the promise that they'll get around to it tomorrow or later this week or Monday or whatever the prevailing excuse of the day is. they delude themselves into believing that they can prospect once or twice a week and it will be okay. But I know the real truth, and so do you. It never works out like that. Procrastination is an ugly disease that plagues the human race, and no one is immune. You've got it, and I've got it. In fact, I have a PhD in procrastination. I'm a bona fide expert. One year, I bought a book called How to Stop Procrastinating. It was my New Year's resolution. And that book sat unread on my bedside table for 3 years until I finally sold it at a garage sale. Every major failure in my life has been a direct result of the collapse in my self-discipline to do the little things every day. Frankly, that's all failure really is. The cumulative impact of many poor decisions, slips in self-discipline, and things put off until it's too late. To add insult to injury, my failures were often accompanied by an embarrassing crescendo of desperate, hurried, and wasted activity, trying to catch up and do it all at once to save my hide. It's in our nature as humans to procrastinate. It's normal, and it's easy. It's easy to say, oh, I'm tired and I'll exercise tomorrow. It's easy to say, I'll start my diet next month. I'll quit smoking after this pack. I'll make up today's prospecting on Friday. I'll start reading that book next week. It's in our nature to fool ourselves with these promises. But there is no reward for procrastination. The failure to do the little things every day will cripple your efforts to achieve your goals. Lack of discipline will slowly but surely tug at your success and will eventually steal it away. To be a fanatical prospector, you must develop the self-discipline to do a little bit of prospecting every day. You can't wait until the end of the year or even the end of the month to prospect. You have to prospect every day. Procrastinating is easy, but the cost is great. Many salespeople don't understand the price they have paid until they wake up one day and realize that they're facing down the universal law of need with an empty pipe and an angry sales manager while sitting on top of a big pile of should-have-dones, regret, and failure. As the saying goes, procrastination is the grave in which opportunity is buried. Perfectionism. I looked on as Jeremy arranged his desk perfectly. He organized his computer, made sure that he had his call script just right. He carefully researched each prospect on his list, Google search, LinkedIn search, company website search, and reviewed in detail the history and call notes in the CRM. An hour went by, then two. Finally, he made the first call, a call to a prospect on which he had done meticulous research. His call went to voicemail, as did the next call and the next one. Then he sighed. No one answers the phone these days. After just three calls, he stopped to arrange things on his desk just so. 20 minutes later, he packed up his things and headed out into the field to visit customers he was already doing business with. In Jeremy's quest for perfectionism, he managed to make 7 prospecting calls in about 3 hours, getting nothing in return for his efforts. Valerie has an office right next door to Jeremy. As soon as she sat down at her desk that same morning, she ran a list off of her CRM and started dialing. An hour later, she'd made 53 calls, spoken to 14 decision makers, and set 2 appointments with qualified prospects. Then she sent 39 prospecting emails. It wasn't perfect. She ran into a few snags and had a couple of calls that would have gone better had she researched in advance. However, she accomplished far more than Jeremy. Valerie was also earning more than Jeremy, almost $100,000 more in commissions, and was the number one ranked sales rep in her division. In her Huffington Post article, 14 Signs Your Perfectionism Has Gotten Out of Control, Caroline Gregoire writes, "The great irony of perfectionism is that while it's characterized by an intense drive to succeed, it can be the very thing that prevents success. Perfectionism is highly correlated with fear of failure, which is generally not the best motivator, and self-defeating behavior, such as excessive procrastination." This statement describes perfectly why perfectionism is the arch enemy of fanatical prospecting. It generates both procrastination and the fear of rejection. The late, great Zig Ziglar said, "Anything worth doing is worth doing poorly." I've always believed that messy success is far better than perfect mediocrity. I'll beat the sales rep that spends a call block meticulously researching each prospect on any day by just picking up a targeted list and calling. Sure, I'll miss a few things here and there if I don't read every note in the CRM, but there won't be enough of a delta to compensate for the activity gap between me and the rep who gets everything perfect before making a single prospecting call. Now, to be clear, I'm not saying that researching or organizing your prospecting block is a bad idea. If you are calling C-level prospects or you sell a complex and expensive product, it is a good idea to research your prospect in advance so that your message is relevant to their unique situation. Advance is the optimal word, though. Do research before and after the golden hours so that it does not encroach on your prospecting block. However, when perfect research, perfect organization, or finding the perfect time to call becomes an obsession that you use to shield yourself from potential rejection, or if you delude yourself into believing that you are working when you are accomplishing nothing, you've got to get control of it. Most of the problem with perfectionism is self-talk. The voice inside your head telling you that when you get all of your little ducks in a perfect row, prospects will be putty in your hands. This self-talk manifests itself in behaviors that tend to have you working hard, getting everything ready and perfect, but not actually doing anything. Paralysis from analysis. Call reluctance is a common label that gets slapped on salespeople who failed a prospect. The term conjures up the image of a salesperson staring at a phone or at their prospect's front door, knees shaking, palms sweating, drenched in anxiety, unwilling to take the next step. Call reluctance is an easy label to apply because it seems to cover all sales sins. But let's get real. Some people aren't reluctant. They're just in the wrong job. If you are a person that is so afraid to call that you can't will your fingers to dial the phone or your feet to move, so afraid of calling on strangers that you find it hard to go to work or even get out of bed, quit. Go do something else. This book won't help you. You don't have call reluctance. You just shouldn't be in sales. Trust me on this. Life is too short to spend doing something you hate. Another more common reason for what appears to be call reluctance is paralysis from analysis. This problem is driven in part by perfectionism and is totally fixable. Here is what analysis paralysis sounds like emanating from the mouth of a salesperson. Well, what if they say no? What if they say this, or what if they say that? How will I know if? What should I do if? Rather than just dialing the phone, sending the email, or walking in the door and dealing with what comes next, the rep goes on a what-if binge, often followed by an attempt to get every duck in a perfect row. Disrupting the three P's. When I'm working with salespeople who are being held back by one or more of the three P's, I get them focused on making just one call. Then the next, one call at a time. Sometimes I get a list and sit next to them and dial two. When they see that I'm not getting blown out of the water by prospects, it gets easier for them to let go and take action. Sometimes I have to be a bit more direct to get them to jump into prospecting. The solution is to push them hard to just do it. Just pick up the phone and make the call. Let the what-ifs take care of themselves. I know that might sound a bit harsh, but a push is sometimes what is required to break this destructive cycle. It's not much different from how I learned to swim. I was 6 and shivering. My toes hung precariously over the edge of the diving board that jutted out over the lake at Athens Y Camp in North Georgia. The hulking 6'5" frame of Coach Poss, the waterfront director, towered over me. We'd spent the last 5 days learning strokes, how to kick, and how to breathe, all in the safety of the shallow end. Now it was time for the moment of truth. Each student had to jump from the diving board into the dark, cold, deep lake and swim the 10 feet or so to shore. It seemed like a mile to me. I looked back at Coach Poss. "What if I can't swim? What if I don't come back up?" I pleaded. I stood on the end of that diving board staring at the water, running all of the worst case scenarios over and over in my head. Coach Poss began walking toward me. He was neither amused nor swayed by my pleading. There was only one thing I feared more than jumping into the lake, and he was getting closer by the second. He'd already unceremoniously hurled a couple of reluctant beginner swimmers from the diving board. I did not want that embarrassment, so I jumped. I hit the cold water and went under. For a moment, I panicked. Then I struck my arms and kicked my feet and burst through the surface. I remembered my lessons and paddled my way to the shore. The strokes were not perfect, more dog paddle than breaststroke, but I made it. I made it. And after that, you couldn't keep me off that diving board. Coach Poss taught me to swim because he forced me to do it. He wasn't worried because he knew I wouldn't drown. We've all found ourselves in the crushing grip of the three P's. I observe salespeople endlessly obsessing and overthinking the potential outcomes of prospecting calls almost every day of my professional life. They convince themselves that they need to gather more facts, just need a little bit more training, or that the timing is not just right. They squander time worrying about what ifs and look at me with puppy dog eyes pleading for more time to get it right before diving in. The human mind abhors the unknown. In its natural state, it wants to be safe and secure. It doesn't like jumping off a diving board into a cold, dark lake or picking up a phone and calling a stranger. It panics in the face of change and clings to the status quo. Then it begins to convince us that all kinds of awful, dire consequences are imminent. But at some point, you've got to do something. And sometimes you just need a Coach Poss or a Coach Jeb to push you to take action. Regardless of your situation, the one thing you can be sure of is that allowing the three P's to stand in the way of prospecting extracts a high emotional and financial cost. You may remember earlier that I promised to give you a code to get a free professional membership at fanaticalprospecting.com. The code is 2, B as in boy, Z as in zebra, R as in Roger, 3, 7, A, G as in goat. That's 2, B as in boy, Z as in zebra, R as in Roger, 3, 7, A, G as in goat. All the letters are capped. Use the code at checkout for your professional level membership at fanaticalprospecting.com. Let me give you the code one more time. The number 2, B as in boy, Z as in zebra, R as in Roger, the number 3, the number 7, A, and G as in goat. All the letters are capped. Chapter 8, Time, the Great Equalizer of Sales. To succeed in sales, simply talk to lots of people every day. And here's what's exciting. There are lots of people. Jim Rohn. At the beginning of every Fanatical Prospecting workshop, seminar, and boot camp, we ask participants to tell us their greatest sales challenge. We've asked the question more than 10,000 times. 80% of sales professionals and sales leaders who attend our sessions say they struggle most with time management. I just never seem to have enough time for prospecting with everything else I have to get done, is the constant refrain. Yes, salespeople and sales leaders are busy. Yes, sales organizations are asking more of their salespeople than ever before. Yes, there are proposals to create, contracts to get approved, orders to enter into the system, calls to record in the CRM, meetings to attend, and asses to kiss. For salespeople, though, most time management problems are self-inflicted. The difference between top performers and all of the other salespeople who are picking their crumbs up off the floor is top sales pros are masters at maximizing prime selling time for selling. Top performers organize their day into distinct time blocks dedicated to specific activities, concentrating their focus and eliminating distractions within those blocks. They develop outside sales territory plans that minimize drive time and inside sales plans that organize their database and resources to get the most out of each sales day. They delegate non-essential and non-selling tasks to their support teams. They are flexible, adaptive, and creative in their quest to maximize time for selling and minimize distractions that steal their commission checks. 24. The one constant for every salesperson is time. Time for prospecting, time for discovery, time for meetings, time for demonstrations, time for presentations, time for closing, and unfortunately, time for administrative tasks, CRM data, and paperwork. Every salesperson has exactly 24 hours each day, and only a handful of these hours are available for selling. It's how you efficiently and effectively use these golden hours that is the ultimate difference between failure, average, and superstardom. When you master time, territory, and resource management, you'll lower your stress level and make more money. Now, this chapter is not an ad nauseum treatise on time management tools. Time management tools abound. From Google Apps to your Outlook calendar to your CRM to the thousands of cutting-edge apps for mobile devices, there is no shortage of tools available to help you manage time, task, and resources. My recommendation is to find the ones that work best for you and then use them in a way that works best for you. You'll find an updated list of time and territory management tools on the forums at fanaticalprospecting.com. My primary objective with this chapter is to generate awareness for how critical time management is to your success and income and help you shift your mindset about how you schedule and manage time for prospecting and other sales activities. I want you to take an honest look at the consequences of the choices you are making about where and how to spend your time and how those choices may be holding you back. Adopt a CEO mindset. The CEO mindset is the most critical component of time, territory, and resource management. Unless and until you are willing to accept complete responsibility for owning your time, nothing else matters. When you adopt a CEO mindset, you choose to see yourself as the CEO of You, Inc. For dramatic effect, I ask salespeople in our Fanatical Prospecting boot camps to take out their business card, scratch out whatever title is on it, and write in CEO. It's a little corny, but it drives home the point that in sales, you control your own destiny. This is the very reason that I love sales so much. CEOs are ultimately responsible for the results of their organization. They can't push blame off on anyone else. They are expected to deliver and the buck stops with them. However, CEOs have constraints because resources are scarce. The CEO is tasked with generating the highest return on investment possible with the scarce resources that are available to them. Likewise, in sales, you are constrained by scarce resources. Your job is to generate the highest ROI possible for your company and the largest possible commission outcome for yourself with those scarce resources. And your scarcest resource of all is time. Fanatical prospectors adopt a CEO mindset. They believe that they and they alone are accountable for their own success or failure. They take complete responsibility and accountability for managing their time, territory, prospect database, and resources. As the CEO of their own selling company, they do not allow anything to intrude on the golden hours, and they are diligent and disciplined with how and where they spend their time. They are also aware that they don't live in a perfect world. No matter how much you plan and how disciplined you are with your time, prospects, customers, the boss, and sometimes life will throw you curveballs. The true test of CEOs in the business world is their ability to find creative solutions to inevitable roadblocks. Likewise, fanatical prospectors do not allow unexpected obstacles to slow them down. They do not blame others. They do not make excuses. Instead, when faced with roadblocks, distractions, and surprises, they adapt and find creative solutions that allow them to work around problems while they continue to fill the pipe. Protect the golden hours. The single biggest challenge for salespeople is keeping non-revenue generating activities from interfering with the golden hours. Now, this is a challenge for many reasons. There will always be clients, managers, and peers who will make requests of you that are non-sales activities but require your attention. When your prospecting activity levels are high, you will naturally generate more follow-up tasks like demos, presentations, proposals, CRM data entry, contacts, approval requests, implementations, follow-up calls, inbound calls, and so on. Doing non-sales activity feels important, like you're getting things done. And non-sales activity is the perfect excuse to avoid the hard work of prospecting. Let me make this crystal clear. Salespeople get paid to sell. Period. End of story. You can whine and complain about all the stuff you got to do if you like, but it will not change the fact that your job is to be interacting with qualified prospects during the golden hours and moving them into and through the pipeline. Therefore, if you are a salesperson and you are not doing things that are directly related to selling during the golden hours, then you are not doing your job. Look, I've heard the same BS excuses a million times. Wait a minute, Jeb. What about all those things my manager or customers need me to do? When am I supposed to get it all done? If the company didn't put so much on me, I might have time to actually sell something, with eyes rolling and a sarcastic tone. And what about my work-life balance? I don't get paid to do all this stuff after work. I've got a family, a dog, a golf game, friends. I got stuff I have to do. Well, here are your choices. You can delude yourself. You can continue along the same track, deluding yourself that doing busy work during the golden hours is actually sales work, but you cannot be delusional and successful in sales at the same time. You can just say no. One of the most effective ways to unload non-sales activity is to just say no. You don't have to take on or do everything that others bring to you. Whenever someone brings a task to you that has the potential to derail your golden hours and it's not mission critical, say no. Now, this won't be easy. However, if you consistently create reasonable boundaries, it won't take long for others to get the message. You can prioritize. Start by getting your priorities straight. I've never known of a salesperson who was consistently hitting her numbers and got fired for not getting non-sales administrative tasks done. Harassed maybe, but fired never. On the other hand, tens of thousands of salespeople get canned for not making their number. Look, not everything is a priority, and in some cases, this means that there are tasks that may not get done. That's okay. Keep the pipe full and get the deals closed, and no one will ever remember. You can do important non-sales activities before or after the golden hours. There will always be non-selling activities that you must do to be successful in your job. Proposals, pre-call presentation, contracts, orders, reports, and CRM data entry are all important, but they are not sales activity. Do these things before and after prime selling time in what we call the platinum hours. Yes, I already know the excuses, but Jeb, I've got a family, a life, things to do. Well, here's the deal. In sales, time is money, and the money is in the golden hours. If you want to make more money, you will have to make some sacrifices. If you want to maximize your income, you will need to get up early, go to bed late, and do some work on the weekends to ensure that you don't waste your golden hours on non-sales activities. You can delegate. One of the most effective things you can do with non-sales related tasks is to delegate them to others. Learn to leverage your support staff to the fullest. In every organization, there are people assigned to solve specific problems and get stuff done. If you don't know who these people are, ask questions and keep asking until you find out. Sometimes these people are assigned to help you on a formal basis, and sometimes there is an informal system that you need to tap into. If you don't have sales support available, consider hiring someone to help you out. You can hire someone locally or easily find virtual assistants who will work for you on demand by the hour. If you are an independent sales rep like a real estate broker, financial advisor, or insurance agent, getting an assistant is a smart move. Top sales pros fiercely protect the golden hours. They say no a lot. When a fellow rep stops by to chat them up about the weekend or bellyache about a recent policy change, they do not engage. When managers and corporate staff attempt to dump busy work on them, they push back. The best reps put do not disturb signs on their doors when they are on prospecting blocks to keep distractors at bay. Your daily mission is simple. squeeze as much out of the golden hours as possible by managing that time wisely. If you are not prospecting, qualifying, information gathering, presenting, or closing during the golden hours, you are hurting your career and your income, and you are not doing your job. The fine art of delegation. Delegating is how you scale yourself. It's how you get more done with the same 24 hours. However, delegating also requires you to let go of control and trust other people. The desire to control everything that is happening with their customers and accounts is how many salespeople get themselves into trouble and cause themselves immeasurable stress. They make promises to their customers, and they want to control the outcomes. I get that. The problem is they cannot scale themselves and eventually stop prospecting because they are bogged down with non-sales activity that others could do. You can only scale when you tap into the talents of others to accomplish more. Effective delegation begins with effective communication. Salespeople create havoc and communication breakdowns when they fail to give clear instructions to their support team. Then, when mistakes are made, these same salespeople throw their hands up in the air and proclaim, "If you want it done right, you've got to do it yourself." Your support team cannot read your mind. When you take time in advance to develop a plan, articulate clear instructions, make sure everyone knows where they're going and have a map to get there, you'll find that you add hours back to your sales week. It may seem tedious in the moment, but the discipline to slow down and do things right up front will actually allow you to speed up. Then follow up, follow up, follow up. Once you have delegated a task to your support team, you must provide consistent and ongoing communication and follow up. One of my favorite sayings is, "In God we trust, everyone else we follow up on." If you fail to systematically follow up on tasks you have delegated, you'll find yourself scrambling at the last moment because critical tasks were left undone or incomplete. It's also important that you invest in building relationships with your support staff. I've always been appalled at salespeople who treat their support teams with indifference and disrespect. In a recent Harvard Business Review article titled "Three Behaviors That Drive Successful Salespeople," Ryan Fuller cites a compelling volumetric study that indicated a direct correlation between success in sales and the salesperson's investment in building a strong internal support system and network. Never forget that the people on your support staff are human, just like you. Show them you care. Listen, give them the same respect that you expect in return, and above all, make sure that you take time to say thank you. Blocking your time will transform your career. The sales VP was desperate for a solution. His sales team was behind on their number and things were not getting better. I spent a day on site observing his sales team, going through the pipeline and analyzing the activity numbers. It was shocking. The standard for each rep was 50 telephone prospecting dials each day, with the goal to set 3 discovery appointments. I analyzed the call data for the previous 90 days. On average, each rep was making less than half of the required dials and setting only 2 appointments a week. Think about this for a moment. This is an inside sales team. Their entire day is dedicated to setting appointments with prospects over the phone, and they were barely averaging 2 prospecting calls an hour. The lack of prospecting activity was putting the entire company at risk. When I pulled the sales team together and confronted them with the numbers, there were excuses. Lots of excuses. "You don't understand, Jeb. We've got so many other things to do. We've got meetings, following up on deals in the pipe, admin work. The CRM is clunky. The coffee is decaffeinated. It takes so long to send a voicemail. People don't answer their phones in the mornings, in the afternoon, on Wednesdays, or during full moons." And it went on and on and on. Well, guess what? I've been there, done that, and I've got the t-shirt. I heard it all before, so I pointed out the fact that the pipeline was empty and asked how they could be spending so much time on follow-up calls and admin when essentially there was nothing to follow up on. They just stared back at me, and the room got cold. Before they could launch into more excuses, I gave them 10 minutes to go to their offices and pull together a list of 50 prospects and meet me back in the training room when they were done. 10 minutes later, with list in hands, I gave them 30 minutes to call 25 prospects with a goal of setting 2 discovery appointments. The stunned look on their faces told the whole story. They fidgeted in their seats and stared at their phones. Two people said they felt better calling in their office. I wasn't budging. No more excuses. So with a little more prodding, they got down to work. 30 minutes later, on average, each rep made 22 dials and set at least one appointment. More dials and appointments than they'd been making in an entire 8-hour day. After some additional training and coaching, they were averaging 29 dials in 30 minutes and setting two appointments. I finally had their attention. The salespeople were shaking their heads, saying they had no idea it was possible to get that much done in such a short period of time. The VP of sales and his CEO were blown away. They couldn't believe what we had accomplished in just 30 minutes. But all I had done, though, was leverage the Horstmann's corollary to Parkinson's law. Horstmann's corollary. Parkinson's law states that work tends to expand to fill the time allotted for it. Horstmann's corollary is the converse. It describes how work contracts to fit the time allowed. I simply changed the paradigm the reps were working under. Instead of giving them an entire day to make their prospecting calls, I gave them just 30 minutes. I repeat this exercise with salespeople within organizations across the globe, and the results are always the same. Salespeople and leaders are absolutely stunned at how much they get done when they block their time, focus on a single activity, and set an outcome goal for that activity. Time blocking is transformational for salespeople. It changes everything. When you get disciplined at blocking your time and concentrating your power, you see a massive and profound impact on your productivity. You become incredibly efficient when you block your day into short chunks of time for specific activities. You get more accomplished in a shorter time with far better results. For example, the average Sales Gravy Inside sales rep makes around 120 outbound prospecting calls a day, selling employment advertising to companies that are hiring salespeople. To most people, that seems like a huge number of calls, and it is. But what really causes a double take is when they learn that we do this in just 3 hours, which leaves plenty of time for updating the CRM, building presentations, making follow-up calls, creating proposals, closing deals, and cross-selling existing customers. We schedule our prospecting blocks into 3 power hours that we spread across the day, morning, midday, and afternoon. During power hours, we do nothing but make teleprospecting calls. We stay off of email and remove all other distractions. We don't do research, allow ourselves to get sucked into CRM management, drift off into social media sites, or accept any excuses. We don't take breaks to get coffee or go to the restrooms. We minimize the downtime between calls by having our targeted call list prepared and researched in advance. This is what we call platinum hour work. We take notes during the call block and wait until after the block concludes to log our calls and update the CRM. Time that is blocked specifically for CRM activity. We also schedule blocks for email and social prospecting. Now, don't get me wrong. It is intense, draining, rejection-dense work. We make calls as fast as we possibly can. However, power hours work brilliantly for two reasons. First, our work contracts to fit the time allotted, so we get more done in less time. And second, anybody can stay focused for an hour. The good news is most salespeople can set all the appointments they need to keep their pipeline packed with new opportunities in an hour or two each day when that activity is concentrated into set prospecting blocks. If you invest just an hour a day to make 25 to 50 telephone prospecting calls and another hour for email and social prospecting, I can absolutely and unequivocally guarantee that in less than 60 days, your pipeline will be packed. Stick to your guns. Let's suppose that you had an appointment with a hot prospect to do an online demo and presentation. You'd been calling this customer for almost 2 months to get the appointment. It is on your customer's calendar, and she is expecting you to be on the conference line at 9 a.m. At 8:50 a.m., one of your fellow reps comes by your desk and says he's going out to get coffee and wants to know if you want to go. Would you? Would you just walk out the door and blow off the meeting? Of course not. That would be completely irresponsible and stupid. You would tell your peer that you have an important appointment and that you can't go. Prospecting blocks should be scheduled or blocked on your calendar like any other commitment. They are appointments with yourself. The key to making prospecting blocks work is to treat them as sacred. In the same manner you view a set meeting with a customer, prospect, your boss, or an important event with your family. When it comes to time blocking, you've got to stick to your guns. Let nothing or no one, not even yourself, interfere or steal that time. Many of the sales professionals who go through our courses hang signs on their door to warn others to leave them alone while their own phone blocks. If you want your own Do Not Disturb door hanger, you can get one at fanaticalprospecting.com. Time blocking is about discipline, pure and simple. You, above all others, must hold yourself accountable to schedule your prospecting blocks and keep them sacred. No one else but you can do that. Concentrate your power. What makes prospecting blocks so productive is the concentration of all your power on a single focus. Of course, this flies right into the face of a culture that has elevated the multitasker to mythical status. Perhaps you're the kind of person who believes you can multitask. You can field text messages from your mom, scan your Facebook feed, take calls from existing customers, answer emails, and dig through your CRM to research each prospect, all while you're making prospecting calls. You pride yourself on being a multitasker, and even brag about your ability to do so many things at the same time. Well, here's the truth, the brutal truth. You suck at it. Basic neuroscience refutes the delusional human belief that we are good at multitasking. The reality is, our brains don't actually multitask. Instead, when we are working on more than one thing at a time, our brain cycles back and forth between those things. It does this so fast that we have the illusion of multitasking, which is why we suck at it. Your brain was not made to multitask. Sure, it was designed to operate in complex environments and process multiple streams of data at once. You can cook dinner and watch TV at the same time, or drive and talk, but your brain was not made to talk, walk, rub your belly, and chew gum. You simply cannot do multiple tasks all at once and do them well. When you have too many things going on at once, especially complex tasks, your brain begins to bog down and you start slowing down. It is no different from what happens when you have too many complex programs running at the same time on your computer. At some point, the processor can't handle it all, and it begins running slower and slower. Be honest. You know you've banged into another person or almost been mowed down by a bus while you were staring at your phone screen texting. You know you've escaped death more than once while applying lipstick, talking on the phone, or checking email while you were driving your car. Most salespeople I work with believe that multitasking is what they are supposed to be doing. They make a call, log into their CRM, research the next prospect through a web or social query, answer an email from the boss, take calls from customers, monitor social media streams, send LinkedIn email, send a prospecting email, send text messages, and instant message their peers. And when I point out that with all of this going on, it took them an hour to make 4 prospecting calls, they stare back in disbelief. No, they explain, I made way more than that. Delusion brought on by multitasking. Look, you secretly know that you suck at multitasking, so why not just admit it? That makes it so much easier to see the truth about your prospecting blocks. You are making maybe 1 prospecting touch every 3 to 5 minutes because you've got so many things going on at once. Prospecting efficiency decreases in direct proportion to the number of things you are attempting to do at one time. Recently, I was working with a group of commercial insurance sales reps who were averaging 7 telephone prospecting dials during a 1-hour phone block. That's 8.5 minutes per dial. Now, it wasn't like they were sitting around doing nothing. They were busy, busy, busy multitasking. Yet they were barely making enough calls to keep the lights on and feed their families. The next day, they averaged 47 dials an hour. So what changed? Well, it was a simple concentration of power. Rather than focusing on multiple tasks at one time, they focused on one, dial the phone. Instead of logging the results of each call into their CRM at the time of the call, they created a list in advance and made their notes on the list. They blocked 30 minutes after the call block to log everything in. Mobile devices were turned off and placed in the drawers. Email was turned off. Signs were placed on doors alerting others that they were on a phone block. And research was done and call objectives set prior to the phone block. The result was both efficiency and effectiveness. Performance improved exponentially. More prospects were qualified, more appointments were booked, and more new opportunities were dropped into the pipe. With all their prospecting calls for the day knocked out in just an hour, they were able to concentrate their power on other activity blocks like lead generation, social selling, outbound email prospecting, discovery meetings, proposals, and, of course, closing. Beware of the ding. Laura abandoned the prospecting call she was about to make, looked down, and reached for her phone. The sound it had just made compelled her to check it. Two text messages, a Facebook post, and a YouTube video later, she finally shifted her attention back to her prospecting list, but she couldn't remember where she'd left off. 7 minutes had gone by since she'd looked down at her phone, and she was oblivious. During the 2 hours I observed her, she lost her focus more than 11 times. When emails came in, her computer would ding, and she'd stop and look at each one, sometimes for a moment, and twice she stopped completely to fret and respond. When her 2-hour prospecting block ended, she'd achieved just a fraction of her activity target. Then, and I swear I can't make this stuff up, she turned to me and said, "See, these call targets they give us are ridiculously unreasonable. There is no way anybody can possibly make that many calls." The two biggest prospecting derailers for sales professionals are email and mobile devices. When something new hits your inbox or social stream, ding, buzz, lights, action. And like clockwork, your concentration shifts to email or a smartphone. 20 minutes later, you find yourself watching a video of a chimpanzee riding a giraffe around a circus tent, and you can't even remember how you got there. Making things worse is the addictive nature of our mobile devices. The average person looks at their phone screen every 7 minutes. Look down, ding, and just like that, you get sucked in. Even as I record this, my iPhone is calling to me. I put it in another room so I would stay focused, but I miss it. You cannot be efficient when you are constantly being distracted. Besides the distraction itself, it takes time to remember where you left off before you were distracted. This is why time blocking and concentrating your power inside those prospecting blocks will make you so much more productive. Placing your attention on one thing at a time is the key. This means that during prospecting blocks or building proposal blocks or follow-up call blocks or whatever block you are in, you need to turn everything off. You can schedule alternate time blocks for dealing with email, watching cat videos, or hanging out on Facebook or Snapchat with your friends. What lurks in your inbox can and will derail your sales day. Anthony Iannarino, author of The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need, advises salespeople not to check email first thing in the morning. Well, maybe advises is a little weak. He's passionate about it and calls it prospecting rule number one. Most salespeople have a really hard time getting started with prospecting each morning because there are dozens of convenient distractions. Iannarino says that one of the best ways to avoid these distractions is to never check your email first thing in the morning. Email is the great time sucker of the 21st century. It is an always-on stream of consciousness. It follows you everywhere on your phone, tablet, laptop, and now trains, planes, and automobiles. It demands your attention. Email is the derailer of all derailers. It is the time sucker of all time suckers. If you are itching for a few unproductive hours that you will never get back, just open up email and dive in. In our always-on society, email has become an addiction. We feel compelled to check it, file it, manage it, rate it, flag it, spam it, and respond to it immediately. We delude ourselves into believing that if we don't jump right on it, we'll be judged as non-responsive or worse. Consider this. When you are with a customer, do you interrupt them with, "Hey, could you hold on just a second? Mary over in billing just sent me an email. It's nonsense, but I need to answer her." Do you leave your phone or laptop sitting on your customer's desk, dinging and beeping while you're in the middle of a sales conversation? Does this sound ridiculous? Well, of course it does. Yet we'll interrupt a prospecting block, an appointment with ourselves to answer trivial emails that can easily wait for an hour or never to be answered. If you were to get up early with me, grab a cup of coffee, and sit in sales offices observing salespeople in the wild, sort of like one of those Discovery Channel nature films with an Australian narrator, you'd see salespeople walk through the door in the morning, sit down at their desk, take a sip of coffee, and dive headlong into email. Look closer at the sales rep's intense concentration on her inbox, says the narrator with an Australian accent. Just a click here, a response there,